searches for his living soul, searches places that he don't want to go, looks for love and for hope. He finds a world that's abandoned them both. Yeah, yeah. All the lies tell us just who to be. Set you free. What we need is that love, the love that comforts from heaven above.
Hi, I'm Kathleen McCarthy, and you're listening to What the World Needs Now, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. I invite you to join me in this hour of God's healing power. Call and join us in conversation and prayer. Remember, what the world needs now is God, and God is love.
And good evening and welcome to What the World Needs Now. This is your host for the next hour, Ken Johnston, and I'll be joined in just a minute by Susan Brinkman. But I want to remind you that coming up on Sunday, April the 22nd, will be one of our two annual fundraisers. It's our Wake Up America dinner that will be held at the St. Joseph's in the Hills Retreat House, a.k.a. the Malvern Retreat House. Again, on Sunday, April the 22nd, from 1:30 to 5:30, we'll break bread together and have a delicious meal, as well as a silent auction and some awesome speakers. And most importantly, the fellowship. We'll be together, and we can share stories and see the faces behind the microphones, and see some of our great and wonderful listeners who join us each year. So we look forward to it. The cost is $55 per person, or $400 for a table of eight. So why not just book a table, bring seven of your friends, and spend the afternoon with us. The information has been uploaded to our website. If you go to inhissign.com and scroll to the bottom of the homepage, there you'll be able to download a flyer with all the information. You can also give Maureen a call here at 610-527-2906, 610-527-2906, and she'll give you all the information you need in order to make your reservation. So I also want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners that are joining us today. For whatever part of the show you can be with us, we thank you. Again, continue to pray for us here at In His Sign, and for those of you that make your financial contributions on some periodic basis, we want to thank you for that, and for the ability to continue to bring you shows like today's. I also want to let you know that we are up to date on the podcast on the website. So if you've missed a show, you're more than welcome to go out to our website. You click on content and podcasts, and you can download all the shows that are broadcast here. So without any further ado, we have a young lady, a woman who's from the area in nearby Horsham, Pennsylvania. I'm in Glenside at St. Luke's, so you're not that far from me. And our guest is Susan Brinkman. She's added another book to her writings called A Catholic Guide to Mindfulness. And Harry had gotten in touch with her a while back and booked her for the show today. And I'm looking to learn a lot about mindfulness today, Susan. So welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Right. And our listeners, if you're a fan of EWTN or Women of Grace, you've probably already heard of Susan Brinkman. For those of us that have been in the diocese for a while, you probably know her even more as the one of the writers for the Catholic Standard and Times, a publication that I sorely miss. I want to thank you for all the great work that you do, Susan, and especially in bringing out this new book for us. Because I'll be honest, until last week when Harry provided me the information for the show today, I did not know a whole lot about it. And if somebody asked me what mindfulness was, it would be, you know, as coming up as a kid and my parents tell me, you know, you need to be mindful of others. And
yeah.
And what
that's what it used to mean.
Yeah, exactly. And then what I gleaned from the sources that I had access to over the past week, it's really that this mindfulness seems to be the complete opposite of that. Rather than being mindful of others and having more concern about others than we for others than we do about ourselves, this mindfulness seems to be a turning in instead of a turning out, to look in instead of looking out. And as somebody that has struggled with addiction in the past, that's the last place I want to be, is looking in. I need to I want to look in for God, you know, if you will, but I spend a whole lot more time trying to look out, because if left to my own devices, I'm just going to get in trouble. So
it's definitely mindfulness is not all that it's cracked up to be, I'll tell you.
Yeah, and
that's something that people need to be very, very wary of.
Right.
Unfortunately, though, it's everywhere. I mean, it's just everywhere, unless you're living under a rock. Mm. Right, maybe you're living under a rock.
Could that be it?
Yeah,
it could be.
But, you know, it's just everywhere. It's in schools. It's in retreat centers. It's really, really being driven right now by psychologists. They're bringing it into therapy. Touting it as being good for everything from, you know, combating stress to teaching kids to focus better, lower your blood pressure. I mean, there's just all this stuff. They're improving your sleep and treating binge eating and all that. Everything out there. And every time you turn around, the media is touting some more benefits from it. But it's just, right now, it's just saturating. It's almost gotten up to the yoga levels.
Right. And that's what I was thinking of. I know a lot of the folks that I've known, and especially folks that were in 12-step programs, you know, they started hearing about yoga, and here's this new way to get that serenity and the peace that the 12-step program promised. But, you know, you can go here and do this. I actually had a friend who was coming to a Catholic group for folks that were in recovery, and he found yoga, and next thing you know, he's a yoga instructor. And so when I was reading about mindfulness, it sounds like the yoga of 10 years ago, that as yoga, I don't know if it peaked out and we always have to find something new, another way to, whether it's to make money or just because our minds can't be set on one thing for a long period of time, like Christ has called us to do, that we have to keep finding these new things to replace religion with. And it sounds like this mindfulness and the Buddhism philosophy behind it is sort of what drives this thing, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, people just looking for the spiritual thrill of the moment. And I think that a lot of people are really genuinely seeking right now, but they've tossed out Christ. And mostly in our secular culture, for the most part, has done that. They sort of said, and I did that to a certain extent at a certain point in my life, too. I said, you know, I've been there, done that. I don't want this Bible stuff. I want to explore other things. And that's where a lot of people are coming from right now. They just want to explore. And they don't realize that in that exploration, they can actually get hurt.
Right.
This stuff can attach to them. It can lead them away from Christianity, even, and I want to say, away from common sense. You know, this Buddhist tradition of mindfulness, what people don't understand about Buddhism is that they're all about the extinction of the self. And their meditation practices, such as Vipassana, breathing space meditation, body scan, which is all part of mindfulness meditation, this stuff has caused some serious mental problems to people, mm-hmm. because it induces altered states. And when you think of an altered state, you think of hypnosis. You know, you're open to suggestion, right? And that's why you do it. You do the suggestion to stop smoking or to stop drinking or to stop eating. And they plant suggestions in your mind. Well, the literature is full of evidence that non-human beings also can plant suggestions in your mind. And these things can be very, very hurtful to you. So there's a lot of problems with this. There's a whole lot of problems with any kind of Buddhist meditation. People think that Buddhism is a very, they like to think it's not a religion because they don't worship a god in Buddhism, and that's true. But Buddhism is actually a philosophy, and it's one that is very, very different from Christianity. There's no compatibility whatsoever, even though a whole lot of Christians, believe that you can mix the two together. Because, Buddhism, you know, they have the Eightfold Path, or it's all about, you know, right thinking and right livelihood and right action and right speech. And isn't that all morally good, just like what we have? And the answer is, yeah, but they're not doing it for that reason. They're doing it for a completely different reason. They're doing it for enlightenment. And their form of enlightenment means death to self. They believe that people who believe in a soul are ignorant. Mm. And enlightenment teaches you to get away from those beliefs. You have to come to the realization that there is no such thing as a soul, no such thing as the self. So they might be using these different actions, which are good and moral and upstanding, and that they might be using them, but they're not using them for the reason that a Christian would use them. So the aims of them are different. Our aims are different from the aims of the Buddhist. So they're very peaceful people. I'm not, you know, saying anything against Buddhists, but they're not Christians. And the two philosophies don't jive.
Right.
They don't jive at all.
Sure. And it's like yoga or some of the other practices where they seemingly seem to be things that are good. But in the end, I think more so, and we don't hear about this a lot and people don't talk about it a lot, that what you're doing is actually opening yourself up or inviting in the evil one. And or other spirits, demons, that want to make sure that once you head down that path, that you never look back to where you came from, and develop that relationship with Jesus Christ. And you and I, as Christians and as Catholics, we know that, you know, like Saint Augustine said, we won't rest until we rest in Him, and we can chase these other things and try to adapt these principles. And I think that this is what we're seeing with, like you say, with the psychologists and retreats that practice these things, that they're saying that the methods are good, but we can adapt it to the Catholic Church or to the Christian religion. And while at face value it may seem that that's something that you can do, what the underlying principles behind it and what you actually do to make that happen is what avails you to these other things that can, like you say, can be quite consequential.
Oh, absolutely. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't realize that until it's too late. They get involved in a therapy session. They're going there for a good reason. They have PTSD, some kind of stress or anxiety, and their psychologist introduces them to it. And, of course, what psychologists always do, they tell you, oh, this has nothing to do with religion. This isn't spiritual at all. And then you find out, of course, that it is spiritual, and they're just telling you that because they don't want you to leave. They know that you're a Christian, and they don't, you know. And a lot of those psychologists, too, they actually believe that it isn't, and that they can divorce the Buddhism from the practice. They believe that as well. They actually do. And I know there's the new Catholic mindfulness that's out there now, and The Mindful Catholic is a new book written by a Catholic psychologist that's causing all kinds of controversy out there, because this is what he does. He essentially says, oh, you know, you don't have to get involved in any of the Buddhism. This has all been divorced from it, and you can actually use this to help you to practice the presence of God, which is something that we do in the Catholic faith, which is just wrong. It's just plain wrong. And Buddhist meditation does not belong in a Christian's, you know, prayer book.
Right.
That's just not part of the way that we do things, is sit and, you know, either blank our thoughts or get involved in intense focusing exercises, which are really mental exercises. They are not prayer, according to what Cardinal Ratzinger says, you know, and according to our catechism, too. It's prayer is a dialogue with God, is a two-way dialogue with God. That is Christian prayer. And any time you adopt something, and he wrote this in a letter to the bishops on some aspects of Christian meditation, anytime you adopt something from an Eastern religion, if it obscures the purpose of Christian prayer, you can't do it. You can't be involved in it. And Christian prayer is not about focusing on yourself. It's about focusing on God. So the two of them don't jive. And although the psychologists will say that, you know, this isn't prayer, this is just something that we're teaching you to do to help you to focus your thoughts so that you don't focus on these thoughts that make you upset. But then what they do is they, in order to teach you how to do that, they use Buddhist meditation to teach you.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I could see if they were just saying, oh, yeah, we're going to teach you just how to be mindful of where you are, you know, sort of like a take a step back and count to 10 moment. If that's all they were doing, that would be fine, but they're not. They're telling you that that's all that they're doing, but then they're saying, okay, and now we're going to do body scan meditation. So they're kind of trying to have it both ways.
Right.
they want to tell you it's not Buddhist and it's all just about focusing, but here's a Buddhist meditation practice that you need to do in order to be trained to be mindful.
Right.
So that's really where all the problems are coming in with this. And, you know, where a lot of Christians are getting upset. Hey, why did I get involved in all this? And you told me it wasn't Buddhist. And one of the reasons that I came out with the book was, I guess, being a reporter from way back. And, you know, I just want to get the facts out to people.
Right.
I just want them to have facts. I think that our press and our media treats us like we're a bunch of morons. They don't give us any facts. They give us their opinion.
Right.
They try to direct how we're going to think. They try to make us or manipulate our opinion about different things. And I think, hey, you know, the American public, we're very educated people. We know how to think on our own.
Yeah.
Give them the facts and let them make their own judgment. So
Amen.
That's what I did. I just sat here and I put together a book. It's only 6 chapters long. And all it is facts, one right after the other. This is what the science says. This is what the Buddhists say. This is, you know, the whole way through the book, that's what it is.
Right.
And it's not opinion. In the very end of the book, the last chapter of the book, I talked to them about the Catholic alternative to mindfulness, which we have.
Mm.
And we've been using for hundreds of years to great success, you know?
Right.
Like what the Bible says, take captive every thought for Christ. I mean, we have our own thought control program. We don't really need, you know, to go to the East for this. So it's something that we just got to get the word out, and that's why I'm so happy to be on with you today.
Yeah.
To just reach as many people as possible to say, put the brakes on this mindfulness and take a long look at what this is all about. There's a lot of stuff that you're not being told.
Amen. And again, my guest is Susan Brinkman, and the name of the book we're talking about is called A Catholic Guide to Mindfulness. I looked on Amazon. Is it self-published, Susan?
No, it's by Avila Institute.
Oh, Avila Institute. Okay, I saw that they had the Kindle version, but I thought the paperback was different. But I saw it's available on Amazon. Is it? I'm sure it's available from the publisher directly. Is that?
We can get it. Actually, you can get it from Amazon. You can also get it from Women of Grace.
Okay.
And you can get it from EWTN.
Very good. So womenofgrace.com or EWTN.com. You can not only benefit from reading the book, but help those organizations out as well. One thing that came to mind, I just got an update from Malvern. Are you going to be out there in the near future talking about this as well?
I am. I'm going to be out there. In June, I'm going to be out there doing an overnight retreat on the Catholic alternative to mindfulness, and I'm going to teach the Sacrament of the Present Moment and the Practice of the Presence of God, which are two companion devotions that the Catholic Church has to actually do what this mindfulness is supposed to do, how to teach us to control our thoughts, to learn how to live in the present moment, to stay in the present moment, where we can then communicate better with our God. So that's going to be in June the 9th. I'm going to be out there. And then March the 20th, I'm going to be out at Malvern giving a presentation on yoga.
Okay.
And the yoga wars.
Gotcha. So I'd encourage all of our listeners to check out malvernretreat.com. You can look up the retreat with Susan in June, as well as this evening on March 20th. And as an alternative to yoga or Buddhism, even consider making a retreat out there if you can't make Susan's one of the other retreats. Because that kind of what's fascinating to me is we have such a rich history of tradition in our own Catholic Church with all the various forms of prayer and prayer that works, that we have the witness of the saints that have gone before us and how it impacted their lives. And yet, we always want to seem to be looking for something new. You know, that was good. You know, that was good for them. It was good, you know, 500 years ago with Teresa Avila and John of the Cross, but that's not going to work now. I need something that works today. And yet, just like you said, especially this practicing the presence of God that, you know, Brother Lawrence wrote about, is still as true today as it was when he experienced it a couple hundred years ago, isn't it?
Absolutely it is.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's that stuff, the stuff, the new stuff that we have today doesn't work. This mindfulness isn't working. A psychologist did a study and found out that the average American attention span in the year 2000 was 12 seconds. You know what it is as of 2015? 8 seconds.
Yep.
So with all of our, you know, focus on this mindfulness and learning how to be present in the present moment, blah, 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 we're not getting anywhere.
Right.
And that, for that matter, all of the things that mindfulness is supposed to be helping people with and treating them with, let me give you some statistics here. This one will really interest, I think, the listeners. There's thousands, literally thousands of studies on mindfulness. And I think anybody who's, you know, sees the news and especially is reading stuff, news sites on the internet where you really read a lot about this, every week there's another study out saying, oh, yeah, mindfulness has been found to help kids to retain knowledge better. And it's helping for stress and it's helping for this and that. Well, in 2014, researchers at Johns Hopkins University decided they're going to study all of those studies. And they pulled together 19,000 meditation studies and analyzed them and came up with a grand total of 47 that met the criteria for a well-designed study. 47, that's 0.0026%, were found to be adequate. The cohorts were too small. There was self-selection bias. There was inadequate controls for placebo. There, for one reason or another, the methodologically, most of them were not sound. There was a lot of bias in them. And so there's really no evidence. Of the 47 studies that did make the cut, the science found only a small to moderate effect of mindfulness in reducing emotional symptoms and stress in that, and no evidence that mindfulness programs were any better than other treatments. So that's the other thing I wanted to get out to people. You know, don't be fooled by, you know, the press is going to tout anything that's not Christian. That's just how they are.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, here it is. Let's get everybody to be practicing Buddhists. Just like they're trying to get everybody to be practicing Hindus, but with the yoga. They just don't want to leave us alone. And there's negative effects. And more reporting now is coming out of negative effects. Psychologists and researchers have said the reason that you don't see a lot of studies in that is because nobody's bothering to look for negative effects. They're so quick to jump on this bandwagon and to promote this to people that they're not taking the time to really study both sides of this issue. And when they do start studying it, guess what? They're uncovering a long list of these psychological and physical side effects, you know, depersonalization, psychosis, hallucinations, feelings of anxiety, insomnia, loss of appetite. And they're not isolated findings. One study found 63% of the group studied had suffered at least one negative effect from this kind of mindfulness meditation. So it's not something that people should be jumping into with both feet. And psychologists, you know, you want to say, how could they do this? But, you know, that's not atypical for them. They have a tendency to jump on these bandwagons. I mean, they've been pushing things like yoga and transcendental meditation for years
right.
for their patients. And it's just something that they do. Not all of them, but it's not atypical. So you just have to be very, very careful with getting involved in this. And especially if you're a Catholic, to get involved in any kind of a therapy that is based in an Eastern religion, which this is, it's based in an Eastern religion, especially if they're asking to do any kind of meditation techniques, because that's a spiritual practice. And that's what you need to be very, very wary of.
Right, and in the in your writing and some of what I learned, it's interesting because what they'll do is they'll change it from meditation and they'll call it an exercise, like
mm-hmm.
so they're trying to divorce themselves from the religious overtones of meditation. So instead of calling it a meditation, we're going to say it's an exercise, and somehow or other the semantics eliminate the spiritual or religious part of whatever it is that they're trying to have you do. The other thing, and I always find Father McKay, who was on with me earlier in our Saints and Sinners show, we started doing a segment called "Is That Odd or Is That God?" where you know things pop up, and you know it's God that's acting in our lives through in one way or another. And I just happened to get an email. I have a son that's a freshman at the University of South Carolina, and we love the president down there, and he's always trying to. Really help these kids, not just with studies, but the practical things in life. And they're getting ready to go on spring break next week. And he sent an email to the kids, and then he forwarded it to all the parents. And what he was talking about is something that you just mentioned, that that our attention span has dropped from 12 seconds, 15 or I guess 18
eight,
years
yeah,
ago,
to eight now, yeah.
to in 2015, it's down to 8 seconds. So he writes that, I recently asked a group of students how many read the daily news, either a physical newspaper or an online version. Only 1 out of 20 students responded affirmatively. So I followed up with, how do you get the news? Most said they received alerts on their phone or followed friends or trendsetters on social media platforms. So it's just confirmation. And
yeah, they're not getting good news.
No, and not only that, but not so much that there's an organized thing going on where everybody is bombarding them with the same information. It's by who they choose to friend on Facebook or Snapchat or Instagram, what websites that they sign up for alerts from. And you only read the headlines. And then you take that headline, and I've been in conversations myself with adults that, you know, have only read the headline and based on that think that they know everything that goes along with it. And yet there's so much more to it. And it's exactly, I think, what we're talking about here is that, you know, at first glance, you know, Buddhist meditation, yoga, all these things, people can make a claim that, you know, I did it and now I'm peaceful, or I did it and I found serenity. Well, that's grand, but it doesn't tell you the whole story. And until we, you know, look into these things for ourselves, and I think one of the things that we seldom do today is to look for the facts. And I even had a guest on the show last week and where we were talking about it, is so many people argue from the extremes that the truth is somewhere in the middle, and where do we find that? And I think that's why we need people like yourself and a lot of the others that we see on EWTN and Catholic publications to remind us that the truth does exist, and that the truth is Jesus Christ, and that it is in following the ways and the practices of all those that went before us, that we can achieve the same things using Catholic practices that you can achieve with all these other practices without the risk of the issues that come along with practicing those other things.
So true. That is such a good point to make to people. You don't have to assume that kind of risk. We have our own methods for doing things here in the church that are just as good, as I said, of mindfulness. And you just don't, why take the risk?
Right.
Why risk it? It's the same thing like with yoga and the exercise. You know, there's like a ton of different things you can do. Why risk this? Why do you have to be drawn to something that's got all this spiritual baggage attached to it?
Amen.
So it's something that, and unfortunately, like what you said, the young people are just looking at the headlines. They're just the 30-second sound bites. That's all they're really getting in the news. But even so, I've often found, too, in this day and age, that people don't care that much about facts anymore. It's feelings now.
Mm.
It feels good. It feels right. It's making me feel good. And they don't realize that, you know, in spirituality, and especially in Christian and Catholic spirituality, sooner or later you got to move beyond, you know, judging your spiritual life by how good it feels.
Right.
I mean, that's considered to be sort of like the beginner level.
Right.
And you need to get away from that and start to move toward God for who he is and come to prayer for his sake and not just for your own. And I think that's another driving factor behind why people are getting involved in some of these meditation practices, because they make you feel good.
Mm.
They put you in an altered state and they put you into bliss states. And of course that feels good. And as our church has warned us, you know, people are prone to mistake that for movements of the Holy Spirit and not realize that they're being led away from the Holy Spirit. And they're now, you know, really succumbing to either demonic spirits who are just leading them away, or they're just self-absorption.
Mm.
They're just becoming absorbed in themselves.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of dangers in practicing this stuff. And I think that the facts do matter. And until the day I die, I'm going to put the facts out there as I see them, because I just think that people have a right to know and to make a fully informed decision before they get involved in any of this stuff. Don't just go there. I mean, there was a story. I know we have to go to break soon, and we can talk about it when we come back, but a story of a young woman in Pennsylvania who died tragically last summer. And it was all over the news. And her name was Megan Vogt. And she ended up having a psychotic break in one of these Buddhist meditation retreats and ended up killing herself.
Mm.
So, I mean, it's not You just don't fool around with this. Anything that puts you in an altered state, do not fool around with that.
Right. Well, you were right, Susan. You've brought us right up to the bottom of the hour. So, Frank, step back, and we're going to go ahead and take a short break. Let me just give out the phone numbers before we go. If you want to call in and perhaps you have a question or comment about mindfulness or any of the things that we're talking about today, the number's here, 610-527-2906, 610-527-2906. Or maybe you're listening through our website at inhissign.com. You can reach us at 888-34-FAITH. 888-343-2484. Don't go away. We're coming right back.
We thank God for our one, holy, Catholic, and Apostolic Church, where Jesus remains present to us until the end of the age, in word and in sacrament. Catholic Radio shares in the ministry of the Church to proclaim the gospel to the ends of the earth. And In His Sign Catholic Radio has been doing so for over 30 years. Kathleen McCarthy and In His Sign have been empowered by the Holy Spirit to bring the fire of God's healing love to the world through Catholic radio and the internet. With God's grace, His word goes out, healing hearts and transforming lives. In His Sign, proclaims the culture of life loud and clear in a culture of death. The ministry's mission is to evangelize, catechize, and to be a voice for those who have no voice, proclaiming the truth that will set all people free. To our faithful family and friends who stand with us, thank you for being missionaries with us by supporting In His Sign Catholic Radio. Without your monthly support of prayer and financial giving, our mission would not be able to continue. Our mission voice would be silenced. To our new listeners, please prayerfully consider joining our monthly circle of family and friends by partnering with us financially each month. All donations are completely tax deductible and go directly to our daily expenses, like the purchase of radio airtime and keeping the lights on. Kathleen McCarthy and all of the staff at In His Sign, except Kathleen's administrator, donate all of their time and talent on a volunteer basis at no expense to the ministry. Donations to In His Sign Catholic Radio may be sent to 136 Garrett Avenue, Rosemont, PA, 19010. Or you can donate securely at inhissign.com. Remember, without your prayers and financial support, our mission voice will be silenced.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston. We'll be together for about another 25 minutes or so. And our guest today is Susan Brinkman. Before we go back to Susan, I just want to remind you about the upcoming Wake Up America dinner that's going to happen on Sunday, April the 22nd. We're going to be at the Retreat House in Malvern from 1:30 to 5:30 on Sunday afternoon. The cost is $55 per person or $400 for a table of eight. It'd be great to see the room full there at the dining hall at the Retreat House, and provide much-needed finances in order to keep this radio apostolate going. We'll break bread together, have a delicious meal, as well as speakers, a silent auction, and be able to rub elbows and maybe get to see the faces behind the microphones. And we as the hosts will get to see some of you that call in and support us so well here. So I do want to praise and thank God and thank you for all the support that you continue to give us on a regular basis, both your financial support as well as your prayerful support. We thank you for that. So our guest today is Susan Brinkman. We've been talking about her latest book called A Catholic Guide to Mindfulness, available from the EWTN or the Women of Grace websites. And she's written this book in response to the increasing awareness of folks that are getting involved in these mindfulness exercises that at face value may seem innocent enough but have their roots in Buddhism. And that philosophy really isn't a religion because, Buddha was not a god, and I don't believe that there's a god involved. So it's really a philosophy. But getting yourself involved in these things brings along some of the risks. And before we went to the break, Susan, we were talking about, you had mentioned the story about the young lady that took her life. But before we go back to that, just something we were talking about before that with feelings. And one of the lessons I learned early on in recovery and in the 12-step rooms, and it's always stuck with me, is the idea that feelings are not facts, that our feelings change sometimes minute to minute, second to second, maybe hour to hour, but they change constantly, and it can be because of input from all different things, whether it's family, friends, television, radio, whatever it is that we're doing, can affect how we feel about anything. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that feeling is a fact. And so many of the feelings that I had, especially before my reversion or conversion back to the faith, were just that. They weren't based in fact. They were strictly based on emotion. And that when we're not feeling right, when we have resentments or we're angry or we're jealous or whatever it is, whatever those feelings that come up, that we need to look at why we feel that way. And I think it's in doing that. And there's certainly Catholic Christian ways to do that. We don't need to, go down the Buddhist or the yoga or any other path in order to figure that out. But we need to try to figure out what the root cause of that was. Because I know in my own life, when I took the time to do that and found out why I had resentments against certain people or institutions and find out why I was angry and look at why I was jealous, that a lot of times it had nothing to do with the people that I had resentments with or the people I was angry at. It usually had something to do with what was going on inside of Ken. People would point out things to me that I was doing wrong, and so I would develop a resentment. And instead of fixing what I was doing wrong, I would blame it on them. So I guess the point I'm trying to make is that it's just that feelings are not facts, that whether we're up, down, or in between, to look at those things and discern why we feel the way we do, and that in there is where we can not only find out about ourselves, but find out about God as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And we're called to live in the presence of God and actually practice that presence of God. And that's something that is just so, it's so rich. It makes your life so peaceful and just so full of goodness when you actually live that. Mm. And we're meant to really live it and not just to talk about it. But, He really is right here with us right now. He's hearing what we're hearing and seeing what we're seeing and feeling what we're feeling. He's that close to us. And when you really begin to develop that relationship with him, hey, you don't need you don't need anything else but him. You just need him. I mean, it's such a powerful and beautiful way to live. And it naturally keeps you in the present moment because that's where God is.
Right.
God's not in the past and he's not in the future. He's right here in the present moment. And all the graces that we need for our life and for all the individual moments of our life are in that moment where our God is. And that's why in the Sacrament of the Present Moment, which is taught by Father J.P. DeCossé, one of the greatest spiritual directors in the history of the Church, you practice that presence, the Sacrament of the Present Moment. You try to stay in that moment and not let yourself be, driven into the, especially to the future with anxious forethought. That's where I'm the most liable to go. I worry about this. I worry about that. I worry about the other thing. You learn how to say, no, my God is here with me now. When I get to that part and I get to that tough spot that I know is coming to me ahead in my life, I will have the grace at that moment to go through that. But I don't have that grace now, and that's why it all seems to be so big and so bad, you know, because you don't have the grace for it yet. But when you get there, you'll have the grace. So it really does pay to stay in the present moment where your God is and stay with him at all times. And that's really is the answer to people who are looking to try to focus and to be more mindful, if you will. This is the way to go about it if you're a Catholic. That's how to do it, because you can stay in the present moment with somebody who can actually help you with the issues that are driving you to need this kind of focus, you know, the anxiety or the stress. Jesus can actually deal with it. If you're just doing this Buddhist stuff, you're on your own, first of all. You can't depend on God's grace to help you do that, whereas we can depend on God's grace to help us stay in the present moment, but they don't have that. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going it on their own. And plus, they're just going to have the same problems as soon as they, you know, kind of awake from their meditation. Everything's still there, you know. And in our case, okay, maybe it's still there for a while, but we have that hope of knowing, hey, I just gave my problem over to somebody who could actually fix it, and rather than just escaping it for 20 minutes. So there's a huge advantage to learning how to live in the present moment in the presence of God, according to the Catholic way. There's huge advantages to doing that. And I think also the fact that the mind is a big battleground where Satan's concerned. That's where he does most of his work. And he's the one who's inspiring us to dwell on the past, to be mournful about what we did, you know, 20 years ago, or to worry about the future. He's the one who does that. He doesn't want you in the present moment with your God. He doesn't want that, because you're going to have too much strength. That's where all the power is in the present moment with your God. He doesn't want you there. So when you're with Jesus and you are in that present moment, you know, he can help you by pointing that out to you. Hey, you know, you just need to resist this. This is a temptation to go forward or go backward and not to stay with you. This is a temptation, and I've given you all that you need to bind and cast that out. You don't have to deal with that. But again, somebody who's just doing this mindfulness practice, they don't have any of those. They do not have that, any of those weapons, so to speak, that can help them to stay focused on the present moment. And I also interviewed a therapist, and I actually wrote a blog about this because it was so powerful. She was a Catholic therapist. She ended up quitting her practice because she was so tired of introducing people to this mindfulness stuff that she said they were then adopting into their prayer life, even though she would distinctly say to them, no, you're not supposed to do this. You're only supposed, this is just an exercise. This is what the Catholic mindfulness course does that I really am upset about. They say to people, no, it's just an exercise, but then right before it, they pray. And this confuses things in the mind of the average Christian who doesn't understand really the parameters of Christian prayer. How often do we ever hear this preached about from the pulpit? Right. It just isn't, you know? They don't understand this stuff, and they think, well, geez, yeah, that feels really good, so I guess I'll just, you know, I'll do some body scan meditation, you know, after my rosary tonight, or I'll do it instead of my rosary. I actually had somebody write to me here at Women of Grace and complain about that her husband took up this mindfulness practice for PTSD and then suddenly decided he didn't want to pray with the family anymore and would go upstairs and do body scan. And when she confronted him about it, she said, well, you know, why aren't you, you know, praying with him? He said, well, because I find this to be more relaxing. And that's what he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, people are drifting away from Catholic prayer, even when it's a Catholic psychologist tells them, don't do that, it's not prayer. But too often, you know, the Catholic therapist or that will begin the session with a prayer or something, and people just kind of blend it together in their minds because they're not very well-educated on Christian prayer and what it is. And this is what inevitably happens. And that one therapist just gave it up. She said, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not doing it anymore, guys, because it's just not working. And she said the people who would just stick to the mindfulness, they would come back a year later with the same problems. They weren't getting anywhere. Mm. So, you know, all these things, I think, need to be a part of the conversation on this, and unfortunately they're not. Yeah. And that's why I'm trying to get the word out with the book. I blog about it. I just do whatever I can. I'm speaking about it. I'm also giving these retreats, as you know, to try to teach people the Catholic method of this, to try to get them away from it and to get the word out,
yeah.
To be very careful about this mindfulness stuff. It's not that innocent.
No. Now, and, you know, what comes to mind is that I went to 12 years of Catholic school and came out and failed out of college, you know, pretty quick, and life was up and down for a long time, mostly down. And when I came back to the faith as a result of, getting sober and, you know, learning that through the 12-step programs that my only way out was through a relationship with God. And, you know, the programs leave it up to yourself to figure out who and what that God is. And so I came back to the Catholic faith. And, you know, when I look back now in light of this conversation, how hard I had to seek to learn how to pray. And I think sometimes everybody assumes that everybody that we're in church with on Sunday, that they know how to pray. And everybody, you know, just because we come to Mass on Sunday, or we went to 12 years of Catholic school, or however many years, or we went to prep or CCD back in our day, that somehow all of us learned how to pray. And we may have learned some of the basic prayers and the rote prayers, but some of the prayer that we're talking about today, I know from your background as a secular Carmelite, that I'm certain that you've studied the prayer lives of Teresa Avila and John of the Cross and the mm-hmm. contemplative life, Brother Lawrence with the practice of the presence of God, with the other forms of prayer that are available, Lectio Divinae and various forms of contemplative prayer. But I don't know that we make it, like you say, we don't hear the message on a regular basis about the need for prayer, and more importantly, I think, how to do it. And, you know, fortunately for me, I came across a couple of great men that were mentors for me and told me how they prayed and brought me along, and eventually found a spiritual director that was able to guide me. But for the average Catholic in the pews on Sunday, that we're not given that. We're not taught how to get to the point where that a prayer life within the Catholic realm is enough, that we don't need to seek, you know, the mindfulness or yoga or these other things that are out there that promise everything that contemplative prayer would give us if we would concentrate on learning how to do that.
And, if only we could do that.
Yeah.
If only we could get that word out, and we do try.
Yep.
We do the best that we can, but it's just not something that's really spoken about really that often from the pulpit.
Yeah.
We should have like an annual day of prayer, you know, or a Sunday devoted to that, you know, where we could all just talk about that, the different forms of prayer, because most Catholics in the pew just think that when they hear the word Catholic prayer, they just think vocal prayer.
Mm.
That's as far as it goes.
Right.
They don't realize that, I mean, vocal prayer is very beautiful. That's the form that Jesus taught us. But that's not all there is. There's a lot more, a whole lot more to it. You know, there's contemplative prayer, there's meditation, there's mental prayer, there's infused contemplation. You know, we have our own kind of bliss states as we progress in the spiritual life, and it's all based on our commitment to the gospel. How much deeper, the deeper our commitment goes, the deeper and more advanced our prayer goes. And if only people knew that, I think that we would be able to combat this a lot easier. And I do teach that as well, of course.
Yeah.
I believe in building up with one hand and tearing down with the other. So I don't want to just be coming after stuff all the time. I also want to be showing, hey, wait, you know, we have something here. We have an alternative.
Mm-hmm.
Because people, you know, as I said at the top of the show, they really are genuinely searching. And it's just we have to help them to find the right thing is what I kind of see the mission as.
Right.
Because otherwise, somebody else is going to find them. And they're going to get themselves involved in stuff that can be very, very harmful and not know it, truly not know it.
Sure.
I look at this Megan Vogt that I mentioned her. She was from Lancaster, Delta, PA is where she was from. And you know, she went to this retreat. It was a Vipassana retreat where you meditate for, and you're in these altered states for like 10 hours a day. for 2 weeks. And, you know, when you do that kind of meditation, they've studied this, neuroscientists have studied it, that it affects the parietal lobe in the brain. In fact, it goes dark during this meditation when you're in those states. And it can be actual Christian meditation as well. When you're in that state, the parietal lobe controls your sense of self and your sensory, your feelings and that sort of thing. That's all controlled in the parietal lobe of the brain, and that goes dark during that time. So it's not that, you know, out of the realm of possibility that a person who would be sitting there deliberately blanking their mind and keeping themselves in an altered state for 10 hours could have some mental issues happen, you know, begin to suffer some sort of damage. And that's what happened with Megan. She was only halfway through this two-week retreat when her parents got a phone call that said, come pick your daughter up. She can't drive. And they're like, what? I mean, she was a perfectly normal 24-year-old girl. Nothing wrong with her. Mm-hmm. And they did come to get her. She had suffered a complete psychotic break. She had no idea who they were, no idea who she was. She thought everybody were illusions. Nobody was real. Hmm. So they pick her up, and as they're driving her home, the father's driving her truck, and the mother and the sister are driving her. And he would see the car door open and closing while she's on the road. And here it was her trying to jump out and kill herself. They took her straight to a mental institution where she had to be kept for over 30 days and treated, and they were finally able to get her stabilized so she could come home. But it didn't last. She was never able to recover or to come out of it, as she explained to her sister in her final note. She just said, I'm sorry that I couldn't come out of this for you. And she climbed up on top of a bridge and threw herself off and killed herself. Mm. And it was very tragic. Everybody here that read about it was just unbelievable that something like this could happen. But I think it went far in waking up the community to say, hey, come on, guys, you know, I hate to bust the bubble here, but this stuff can be very, very dangerous. And here was a person who did not have any mental problems. There was nothing wrong with her. She was perfectly normal. And look what happened to her.
Right.
So anyway, I mean, it can happen. And it's like, why risk it? And what are you looking for? And I think that's a question, like what you were saying, that you had to do at one point in your life. You have to ask yourself, you know, what is it that I'm actually looking for here? And why am I so sure that I can't find it where I've been before? It's a question I had to ask myself, too. And I ended up coming right back to where I had found it in the beginning. I came back to the Bible that I thought, oh, yeah, that's old hat. I don't need that anymore.
Yeah.
And I ended up, that's where I belonged. And I took a long and circuitous route to get back to it. And a route, there was a lot of damage done to me during that time, a lot of regrets, but I did come back, and that's what matters. And I learned a lot while I was away, and I truly understand when people do go off. I understand why they're doing it. I don't think it's because I think they're evil, you know, or anything. They are genuinely searching.
Right.
They're looking for something. And like I said, we have to help them find the right thing. And most often, if they really look at themselves and say, okay, what is it that I'm looking for? They're all going to say the same thing. They're looking for peace.
Right.
They want peace. They want love. Well, there's an author. How about the author of Peace and Love? And if you haven't had a relationship with them before, why don't you just try it? Just try having a relationship with Jesus Christ.
Exactly. Exactly. And I know when I... after many years of being in recovery, and when I have the opportunity to get in front of a group, I often talk about the hole. The title of the talk might be "What's in Your Hole?" And you know, God creates us intentionally with this hole, and whether you want to call it a soul or your heart or whatever it is, but we're not complete, and God creates us that way intentionally, with the hope that sooner or later we're going to fill that hole with him. And so to me, that it clearly explains why everyone is seeking, not just you, not just me, not just my family, or it's everybody that God has created has been created with this hole that needs to be filled. And what are we going to fill it with? And with the people that I traveled with, you know, it was sex, drugs, and rock and roll, alcohol, you know, whatever it was to get that short-term fix or the short-term pleasure, because all we wanted to do was, like you say, we just wanted peace and serenity. We didn't want to be bothered by our parents or employers or the guy on the news. We just wanted to be live in peace. Just leave us alone. And so we sought, or I sought, to fill that hole with everything but God. And then to get to the point where I was willing to start to empty that hole and allow God to get in, because when it's full of everything else, there is no room for God. And that's why I think the 12-step program, and with, especially combined with our Catholic faith, is just absolutely awesome. The sacrament of confession, to be able to dig everything out of that hole and then start to make room for God. And my experience and those that I travel with, we only need a little bit of room to let him in, because once he's in, he's the one that can take over and bring us that peace and serenity and that joy that we're all looking for. So I'm like you. When I see, addicts under the bridge or alcoholics on Skid Row or what have you, it's not, I look at them with empathy, because I know, but for the grace of God, it would be me, and that they're seeking exactly the same thing I'm seeking. They just, went off the rails in trying to fill that hole. And so the work that we try to do here at In His Sign, and the work you're doing with Women of Grace and your own apostolate to bring people to the feet of the foot of the cross and give them an experience of Jesus Christ, so that he can begin to fill their hole. Really why I think I'm alive today, and why you're alive today, that God allows us to experience the things that we did when we went off the rails, so that we can come back and tell people that are in the same situation, hey, here's what I did, and look, and I experienced moments of peace and serenity and the true joy.
Exactly.
Things that I never got from a drink or sex or cigarettes or television. So
exactly. And he does it so gently. And I know I was so afraid that he was going to make me into a Jesus freak.
Mm.
I used to say, don't you do that to me. I'm not going to be with you if you're going to make me into one of those Bible thumpers.
Yeah.
I would be. And you know what? He finally got it across to me, Sue. I just want to be with you. I want to be with you, who you are. And whatever changes that I made, Ken, I made them on my own. He never asked me to do anything. I made everything on my own because I started to love him so much. Because he was accepting me for who I was.
Right.
He wasn't pointing fingers at me. He wasn't doing anything. And slowly but surely, it was me who came away from the sin that I was committing and thought, you know what, I don't want to do this because I don't want to hurt him. He's the best friend I ever had. And you know, he does it so gently when he gets a hold of you. He's so gentle. And would just... The other side is going to try to do everything in his power to say, don't go with him. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. Oh, and he did that for years. I used to worry about that. And then, it finally occurred to me that, you know what? He's not making me into a weirdo. He's letting me be who I am. Mm-hmm. And I'm called to sainthood right here in the place where he put me in this life. I'm not supposed to be a Bible thumper, standing on a soapbox in the, downtown Market Street. I'm not supposed to do that. And maybe that's somebody else's calling, but it's not mine.
Right.
And it ended up, what he needed me to do was to be a writer, which is that was a dream come true for me. That's what I had worked my whole life for, was to be a writer. And he made it happen and said, no, that's where I want you to be. You need to buy thump the Bible. This is what I want you to do. I want you to write and write for me. And that's what I'm doing.
And you did it well. You've done it
well. Trying.
Yeah,
trying,
well, keep fighting. Right, keep fighting the good fight. And my
Thank
guest,
you, I will.
Yeah. So, our guest this hour has been Susan Brinkman, and we've been talking about her book, A Catholic Guide to Mindfulness, available at EWTN.com or womenofgrace.com. She's also going to be out at Malvern on March the 20th to give a presentation on Catholicism and
yoga,
and then a retreat, a one-night retreat in June, just on the same topic, the mindfulness. So, Susan, I can't thank you enough for being with us. I know you come on from time to time with Kathleen and Ann, and just great to have you again. And look forward to having you on again in the future.
Thank you so much. Anytime.
You're welcome. All right. I want to thank everyone for being with us today. It's been always my pleasure to be here for these couple hours, and I look forward to being with you again next Wednesday. Until then, my prayer is God will hold you in the palm of his hand. Take care, and God bless.
Thank you.